It's often said that history is written by the winners. And because of that, we rarely are given the real story of what happened, what shaped our society, the country, our cities. Because in large part, the stories of the indigenous, the working class, the poor, they're erased or pushed aside to make way for a more marketable narrative. And that's no different here in the city of Chicago, whether we're talking about the founders or the Haymarket riot. There's alternate versions of how and what went down. Enter Kevin Koval, the longtime poet and writer, has penned a new collection of poetry called A People's History of Chicago, put out by Haymarket Press. Kevin, of course, the artistic director at Young Chicago Authors and the founder of Louder Than the Bomb, the citywide poetry competition, which I can't even, I mean, we're not even going to start. That's crazy how big that has become. It's a worldwide phenomenon at this point. He's also the editor of the Breakbeat Poets, New American Poetry in the Age of Hip-Hop, and he is my guest tonight. Kevin, good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
All right, before we start, let's start with a reading, right? Let's go right, because this is a collection of poems, like we said. Why don't we start with LaSalle Wrote It Down Wrong?
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you. LaSalle Wrote It Down Wrong, 1687. Gringoed the whole place after word, every street and building, some flat mispronunciation, some misshapen mouth, some murder. Chicagua, wild, garlic in indigenous utterance, some funk music, some rampant weed returning, perennial and persistent. Chicago is malignant. A mass of machinery built upon mass graves, the beginning of a long death march, an inadequate water down, an eraser, pink as the white man's tongue.
You know, I hear that and the other poems as well. There's a chronological aspect to this, you know, obviously A People's History of Chicago. But that poem, of course, talking about the origins of the city as we know it. But this goes all the way through to some of the current issues that we face today in Chicago. Talk about why you took this on. Why have a collection of poetry that follows a sort of historical arc?
Well, I think I wanted to account for, you know, some of what you mentioned in the intro. I wanted to account for some of the working class victories, some of the hard fought victories that working people in the city have made to make the city better, to make the country better. I wanted to put on for Chicagoans, who I think really, you know, innovated and revolutionized global culture. Some folks we don't really put on for enough. I think that we have a tendency in the city sometimes to not really champion our own. I hope that that's changing. But I wanted to do that work. I also wanted to, in some ways, I think, counter some of the dominant narrative that exists about our city currently. You know, we have historically, in some ways, a bad reputation from outsiders looking in, but even I think some of our own. And I wanted to tell, you know, in the best way that I could, a broader spectrum of the experience and some of the people who are here.
You know, and you think about the fact that, you know, there has been a people's history. I mean, Howard Zinn and the concept of telling a different history or examining what we know as a collective society about history and telling the stories that may have fallen through the cracks. Was that an inspiration for you to do that? I mean, or is this really just about telling the right story for Chicago?
Well, of course. I mean, Howard Zinn and his work as a historian, as an advocate, and as a writer has historically been a profound impact in my own life and certainly my writing. You know, Howard, the folks who run Haymarket Books were Howard's literary agents, and also Howard published with Haymarket before he transitioned, and had the opportunity to meet him a few times through the folks at Haymarket. And I think that when I read that book, A People's History of the United States of America, it kind of, you know, confirmed some of the things that I had intimated just as a young, very young person, that, you know, systematically in our education, I was being lied to. And Howard's book, along with the historian Lerone Bennett Jr. and other folks, you know, confirmed these suspicions. And I think what I wanted to do was write a history book that was for young people in Chicago now, in high school, in college, and everybody, that we can also begin to kind of take back some of the narrative that exists about our city historically and currently, and begin to also, you know, tell some of the great things about our city.
Do you consider yourself a history buff? I mean, is something that you paid attention to Chicago history?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I think hip hop made me a historian, you know, and I think that it taught me to dig into the record. And, you know, I think being a Jew also made me, you know, retell history constantly, but to make it relevant now. And I think in order to do that, you have to riff on, you know, some of the themes of, you know, what we've forgotten and make history relevant. You have to tell the compelling story. I think that's what, you know, the rabbis did for thousands of years. We call it, you know, Talmud and the Midrash, and I think hip hop does that in a similar way, you know, where it takes these forgotten bits of the record and it finds the fresh sample, it finds a beautiful moment, something that is past, and it brings it to make it contemporary.
You know, it's so interesting to think about, you know, sort of the way that history is taught to us as young people, as you know, I think middle school, high school, then you get to college, you start to really learn how to question that history. And I think about, you know, I was telling you when we started that, you know, my 9-year-old son had a book project on DuSable, and I said, okay, we'll start. You know, I'll start looking some stuff up, and I went down the rabbit hole on a bunch of questioning of. Why people didn't recognize that DuSable was the original founder of the city, where he came from, what happened, and historians sort of arguing back and forth. I mean, it was such a complicated narrative that is still being argued in history circles today, but it just goes to show you that with further examination, there is obviously more things to learn.
Yeah, and we have to contend the dominant narrative always. You know, I think that there's a reason why. I mean, one of the things that I really loved about researching this book and writing this book is that, you know, I mean, I've known about and have, you know, been inspired by some of the work and the organizing and you know, the speeches of Chairman Fred Hampton, but the work that he was trying to do to build these interracial coalitions between the Black Panthers, the Young Lords, and the Young Patriots. I mean, it's part of the reason why he was assassinated by the Chicago Police Department and the FBI. Because, I mean, when working people have come together across the boundaries that the city tries so desperately to keep erect before either they meet and build with one another, I think that's what troubles the center the most.
And history has a way of washing, you know, the idea that, you know, at a certain point something is complicated or it doesn't fit the narrative. It just kind of gets left to the side or certain details are left out. Fred Hampton's a great example of, you know, the way I'm taught about that story is, these violent you know, Black Panthers and, you know, there and next story, next year. Right. You know, and you move on from that, but you find out as you get deeper that there's much, much more to it.
Right. I mean, we literally walk over history. I mean, there's a small emblem or, you know, something to commemorate the Haymarket riot. And, you know, these are working people who ensured that, you know, at least we have an 8-hour day. And, you know, where is their monument? Where is, you know, I mean, Chicago made working people, made, you know, the bourgeois class more accountable to working people and have done that consistently, you know, through organizing efforts, putting their lives, their bodies, their family, their livelihood on the line in order to ensure that workers have a better look in the city. And of course, we have a long way to go. But I think part of the reason why I also wanted to write the book is because I wanted us to know that we also have won. You know, we have a rich history of winning as well. And particularly in this moment where there's so much divisiveness between working class communities in a moment of radical unlistening where we don't do a great job of really hearing one another. I think the power is when we come together actually across those boundaries and really build solidarity.
Kevin Koval's my guest. He's the author of A People's History of Chicago, a collection of poetry. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll read some more and continue the conversation at the big table here with Kevin Koval. Stay with us.
Albert Parsons can hang, November 11th, 1887. A dumb kid of privilege, a son of the South, a descendant of the American Revolution. As a boy, he fought with the Confederates. As a man, he apologized to the Black woman who raised him. A lover of Lucy, part mestizo and Black radical socialist, more dangerous than 1,000 rioters, a typesetter like my grandfather, a believer in the rights of the worker, an 8-hour day, an 8 to sleep, an 8 to play, a ringer of the alarm, a white tiger before Huey maybe, dynamite Jimmy Walker, an organizer in the good times, summer Sunday beer gardens, a longing for bread or blood, a leader in the rise of the working class, a target the barons went after, an albatross to the merchant prince Marshall Field, a defendant in the Haymarket riot, no evidence, no fair jury, railroaded by George Pullman, Albert Parsons, a white man to become, a white man who acted, a white man unbound by guilt, a prisoner in cell 29, a writer live from death row.
That's poet Kevin Koval. His new book, A People's History of Chicago, is out now. It really chronicles Chicago history from people's perspective. He's the artistic director of Young Chicago Authors, as well as the founder of Louder Than a Bomb, in studio at the Big Table tonight. That poem's a great example. You're talking about the Haymarket riot, of course, the trial, everything that went along with it. We were just talking about the 8-hour day. You know, it's interesting because you're a poet. So you choose poetry as your form, your vehicle, your mechanism to tell these stories. Is that the best mechanism for you to tell these stories? I mean, or why not do the 600-page Howard Zinn style?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that's something about this moment, even in our cultural attention span, where the poem seems right. You know, it's not too long. You know, it can get you. And then hopefully, I think the poem will do for people, for you know, what kind of hip hop music did for me is that hopefully it will open up a Pandora's box of research. It will, you know, set somebody kind of on fire about an idea and kind of, you know, it'll be a bone that you won't be able to let go of in some ways. And, you know, I believe in content over form. And so, these are poems, but, you know, some of them read and look like prose on the page. Some of them are formal. There's villanelles and there's found poems and there's, you know, all sorts of, you know, there's an erasure poem where I took some language on the city of Chicago's website about the graffiti blasters and, you know, used their language, right. But I buffed their website in order to get a poem out of it. And so, you know, I don't know. I think that there's something about this moment where there has been a real return to the oral poetic in our culture, you know, thankfully. And in some ways, it's the most ancient of storytelling traditions, the poem, the song. But I think it's also perfect for grabbing one's attention, particularly in the classroom.
I was going to say, who's the audience here? Are you looking for young people? I mean, for young people to sort of to digest this and understand their history, to maybe sort of be a jumping off point to try and understand Chicago history in a different way?
And I think it's also the invitation to, you know, document and write your own as well. I mean, I think that's the hope. And you know, the Lannan Foundation, who's been a partner of Haymarket and mine for some time now, you know, they bought, you know, copies of the book for every young poet in the festival this year, as well as every high school for the English and history department. And so the hope over this year is to really kind of work with teachers and, you know, potentially CPS in order to kind of get the book inside of some curricular spaces as well. And really the idea is, yes, I mean, maybe young people will have a better, richer understanding of what Chicago history looks like, but really that maybe they'll begin to kind of, you know, ask their parents and their grandparents about their stories and then begin to really document their own. That, you know, I believe as a poet that the canon is so far from closed, we're constantly adding to it, and that history is that as well. You know, none of this is in a museum. You know, it's happening currently. You know, we're making history in this moment, and young people are the best purveyors.
How important is it as a poet, as a Chicago poet, when you're writing poems about Chicago history, to include your own story? You know, you mentioned your grandfather in here. I mean, just to have that sort of frame of reference or that jumping off point, how important is that as a writer to sort of play off your own history?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm in the book some, you know, and I mean, somebody was pointing out that there are a lot more poems after 1975 than before 1975. and there's no mistake in that. I think that, of course, you know, I associate my story with the story of Chicago. I mean, my family, you know, moved here from the Ukraine and Poland to be saved in a lot of ways. And so, you know, they took refuge in Chicago. And I wish Chicago was more of a sanctuary and a city of refuge for all people, you know, and we, even folks who have come, you know, from the South, folks who have come from other countries, I think we need to continue to ensure that it is a city of refuge, a sanctuary for all. We do a really poor job of that as a city. And I think the sanctuary that it gave my family, it really should give to all of its citizens who are seeking a safe space here.
Well, we'll get to the We'll get to some more current poetry, some of the stuff from current history. We'll read some more, and we'll also talk about your work at Young Chicago Authors, which is constantly checked here on the download. I mean, we have artists come through, and it's always, you know, talking about that experience. I was at the Young Chicago Authors. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that, and we'll talk. Kevin Koval, the artistic director of Young Chicago Authors, also a poet. His new book, A People's History of Chicago, is out now. We'll take a quick break and update the news with Rob Martier, and we'll come back and continue the conversation with Kevin Koval. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, the 9 o'clock hour, Jordan Vogt Roberts is going to join us, the director. Also, Tamika Reed's going to be here, a cellist, jazz cellist. She's going to be at Chicago Symphony Orchestra coming up on Friday as part of a big jazz performance, part of their series. Looking forward to having Tamika in studio as well, talk about her career. And at 10 o'clock, Kristen Toomey and Rena Kalm in studio to play the worst. We got a big show, but hey, we're continuing. Kevin Koval.
Cities celebrate Independence Day, July 4th through the 7th, 2014. 1. Midwest weekenders gather at the lakefront, blue eyes over Navy Pier. The breeze has ease, distant light jazz, a cacophony of calm and citronella. The sky on fire above the mighty Michigan boasts. Penthouses, sailboats, stock sunburnt faces alight in laughter and light beer. A lightness here, a whiteness, a luxury to hear blasts and not flinch or think someone you love is not. Here is not a land of blood or body. All remains remain well. Deposit box inheritance, the future aright, bright, awash in light. The holiday is every day. 2. Neighborhoods will bloom tonight. Many arsenals stockpiled from Indiana, smoke and fire in the streets and alleys. Corner boys and working fathers make the sky burn. The light on the block warms the faces of little ones. Mothers on stoops finally sitting for a moment to watch dusk turn the color of candy. Bustelo cans are cannons. Roman candles and county men's hands launch fireballs into the dark, raging against the stars. Downtown, the 1812 overture will whisper gently over the water, but here, quarter sticks of dynamite, bass drum, a requiem for the fire crackers take and for those who won't make it. Tonight, Warren Robinson, 16, will be shot 20 times by police with his hands in the air. Tonight, Pedro Rios, 14, will run like a boy until the cops fire two in his back. Small armies overrun the streets, free and aimless, makeshift orchestras of whistles, bottles, bombs, the war of each day, reenacted every night.
Poet Kevin Koval in studio tonight. His collection of poetry, A People's History of Chicago, out now. The artistic director of Young Chicago Authors, also the founder of Louder Than a Bomb, poetry festival, the citywide poetry festival for Chicago's youth. That poem is one that really does, we talked about sort of current events, but this is one that really sort of highlights an issue in Chicago, which is there are a lot of things happening at the same time in this town, and a lot of times not very equal.
Yeah, we live in two cities, or more at least, but we continue to reinscribe, you know, I think terroristic inequity, this criminal inequity in communities primarily of color. And, you know, there's no difference. I mean, it seems in the eyes of many, but in reality, you know, even where we're sitting now on the Millennium Mile, you know, is so different. The Magnificent Mile, it's so different from, you know, some of the spaces where the city has had this great depletion of resources. And so I think as a city, And as a person who loves the city, I want to try to account for the whole, and also, you know, bring to light constantly, as many people do, that there is this you know, giant canyon between those who have and, you know, those who are forced to live without often, and who sometimes have to turn.
And to be fair, I mean, that is where you see the inequities. You see them in history. You see them in history books and the way that we chronicle our histories. You don't hear the stories of what happens on the 4th of July or as we've seen in the last, even more than a decade, but we've seen highlighted in the news on 4th of July weekend where there's so many shootings, so many deaths. There is a part where that will be sort of brushed over when it comes to the writing of our history now.
Yeah, we kind of perpetuate the same kind of tales and everything like that, you know, and I think, you know, one of the things that I also, you know, hope to really deal with in the book is the violence that's perpetuated by the state, you know, by the country itself in the lives of working people. I mean, you know, when we talk about violence in Chicago, it seems to be individualistic as opposed to systemic and historic. And, you know, those are the cycles that ultimately repeat from, you know, from the time that, you know, we as a city, as a country, wiped indigenous people from the land. You know, we've been stealing and taking and murdering in the name of an idea over the lives of individuals who comprise this place. And that continues with gentrification, that continues with the erasure of you know, the work of you know, women, of the work of people of color in the city, who have championed the city, who have uplifted communities. And so we don't tell those stories. And, you know, part of what I hope the book does as well is that it you know, invites and hopes, you know, I hope to create more spaces like we do at Young Chicago Authors for people to tell those stories.
You know, as I think about this and I think about what's happening in our culture today, political culture indeed, when you think of President Trump tweeting out about Chicago, the negative reputation that the city has. I mean, as you mentioned earlier in this interview, you talked about sort of pushing back a little bit because, you know, obviously when we just heard with the Independence Day poem, there's negative attitudes in there, but I mean, or negative perceptions about who we are and what we do. But there's also a movement as part of this collection of poetry to change the sort of the national narrative of Chicago to make it more positive.
Well, and who benefits from that narrative, right? I mean, that narrative about a criminalized city it really only benefits privatized prison industrial complexes. It advocates for the, you know, continuation of a police state in certain neighborhoods and that federal response that city or county response ultimately, like, only, you know, plays into this also historic imagination of the, you know, the white criminalization of, you know, black and brown working people. And I think that, you know, is also, we need to counter those narratives. You know, I think that's where Donald Trump is coming from. I think too often politicians in this city are also coming from that same space. You know, I mean, it's not that. Yeah, and so that's part of what this book is,
too. You
know,
with Young Chicago Authors, and I want to take a break soon so we can talk more about Young Chicago Authors, but one of the great things about your organization, but also other organizations in town, is there seems to be much more of a collective movement to share the voices of young Chicagoans, specifically Chicagoans, young people of color. The concept that their voices count as much as others, and that may not have been the case in this city for far too long. Talk about that. I mean, that plays into this book as well, about the idea that, you know, you can be a kid from Pilsen or a kid from Inglewood and be able to write a people's history of Chicago.
Well, I think hip-hop ensures that voices who have existed at the margins of civic discourse now have carved out space for themselves at the center. I think that, you know, that's part of the process of, you know, which itself is, of course, part of the work, you know, from Ida B. Wells to now as well. You know, I mean, I think that Chicago hip hop in particular finds itself in a literary tradition of, you know, voices and workers and organizers who have really tried to ensure that the story is told in its totality and not just from the 1% or not just from the few, but from the many. And if we really believe in the principles of democracy, if we really believe in, you know, Chicago running, you know, from Howard, you know, all the way to the hundreds, then we need to hear from it. It's, you know, in its totality. And I think that's part of the reason. I think young people have taken the call of hip hop cultural practice and have, you know, began to. I mean, that's why we're in the midst of a renaissance now in this city culturally, is because young people, you know, arguably probably 14 to, you know, 27 are taking the tools around them, even though the city has turned its back on them, and are creating in magnificent, profound ways. And they are, of course, in a tradition of great Chicagoans. They are in a tradition of, you know, Black arts movement. They are in a tradition of, you know, Ana Castillo and Sandra Cisneros and Luis Rodriguez. And they are also in a tradition of organizers. But I think that there is a profound genius in this current generation of young people.
Let's talk about that, because like I said, I mean, the Young Chicago Authors gets name-checked a lot on this program with some of the artists that come through here. Kevin Koval is the artistic director of Young Chicago Authors, but he's also the author of A People's History of Chicago, which is out now, Haymarket Press. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation with Kevin here on The Download. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me at the big table tonight, poet Kevin Koval, the artistic director of Young Chicago Authors, also the founder of Louder Than a Bomb, the citywide youth poetry competition. Of course, his collection of poems, A People's History of Chicago, that's what we've been talking about. You know, I mentioned, it's amazing for all the artists that come through, poets and musicians and artists. Inevitably, we'll talk about where they came from and how they got there, and they'll talk about being in a small black box up the stairwell at Young Chicago Authors, to, you know, reading in front of their peers when they were 16 years old. I mean, it's amazing to me to think about all of the artists, from Chance the Rapper, who does the foreword for this book, and others who have gone through your doors that are now shaping American pop culture, not just Chicago pop culture, but they're sort of at the epicenter. Does that blow your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I feel we're really lucky and privileged to be able to meet so many incredible young artists. I think part of what's happened is, it's really simple though, at the same time. And of course, we work with organizations around the city. You know, Harold Washington Library's U Media program, Kumba Links up in Uptown, Rebirth Poetry Ensemble, Lyric in North Lawndale. There's a lot of organizations that we work with, and I think the things that we have in common is that we try to create spaces in a city that criminalizes young people the minute they walk into any institution. And I think we countered those ideas with simple principles of just taking young people where they're at and carving out and creating space for them to be themselves without apology.
Right.
And it's a simple idea that seems to be, unfortunately, you know, kind of radical. And we need more and more of these, I think, guerrilla sanctuaries around the city of Chicago.
What I always find interesting is that a kid will come in here, a kid 19, 20 years old, and they'll talk about, they didn't necessarily start off in the atypical way that you think they would. You know, you would think that a rapper would be sort of like, with 9 years old, be like, oh, I've got this innate talent, and I'm in the studio. You know, it's not like that. They talk about being introduced to the written word, or to the spoken word in poetry, you know, before they even knew anything about hip hop, or they had no interest, or they weren't thinking about that thing. But they talk about the confidence that comes along with performing poetry in front of people, doing things at Young Chicago Authors, or like you said, the other places, Harold Washington Library. But there is something about the lyrical element of that brings in the confidence, that gives them the confidence to put their art into music or into other forms.
I say in the book that the children of Gwendolyn Brooks are rappers. And, you know, of course, the city is honoring the centennial year of Miss Brooks. And I think, you know, we teach her all the time and for years. And I think, you know, we also see ourselves in her literary tradition. And we see Miss Brooks is our matriarch in a lot of ways. And I think that is literal, that she also taught the teachers of us. She taught the teachers of a hip hop generation. You know, her students, Angela Jackson, Carolyn Rogers, Hakeem Adubuti, you know, many others, you know, they taught us, and they taught us to really, I think, fall in love with the music and language. I mean, Miss Brooks would chop up the syllables in such unique, precise ways, where she would delight in each utterance of a word that rappers do. And I think that is the lineage and the path.
Interesting,
I think it's part of the reason why, you know, young rappers in Chicago are so lyrical, and also are so musical. In part, is because of the poets that came before that legacy. Yeah,
you know, and I think about the fact that we had a couple of the kids who were in Louder Than a Bomb in the citywide poetry competition in studio, and what their performing for us is not only lyrical and not, like you said, not only musical, but it's political.
Yeah.
And it's the story of their life. And it's a life, it's a story that hasn't been told. I mean, there's something about all these kids that come through Young Chicago Authors with Loudon and a Bomb. They're telling stories that just haven't been told before.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, that's very unfortunate, right? I mean, that these are lived stories in the community every day. And I think the power of hip-hop is that it demands representation. And in a city, in a country that refuses to see and acknowledge people and disenfranchise vast swatches of communities, that it is a powerful tool to ensure that the presence, the voices are also existing at the center of our civic conversation.
You know, Kevin Koval's my guest in the studio. His new book of poetry, A People's History of Chicago, is out now, the foreword by Chance the Rapper. Artistic director at Young Chicago Authors, founder of Loudon the Bomb. I've always ended the big table, especially with Chicagoans, talk about what they love about Chicago, what they don't, and things like that. And I think in your case, instead of asking you the question, maybe we can just get you to read from one of your poems, Chicago Has My Heart, which is a great poem that's in the collection. Why don't we do that to wrap up the big table tonight?
Don't ask me to leave. Don't force me to go. When the coasts call, when the rents rise, when the city I know is unrecognizable, it's mine. Not alone, not to own. Chicago has my heart. At the lake, on the train, in the first days of spring that remind us why we live here at all, have bodies, can use them outside the cold restrictions of clothing, the confines of neighborhood. Chicago has my heart, the land I'm most confident. Give me an address, I'll get us there. I know the grid. Blocks got people in these streets. Students whose family run the breakfast spot on 79th near Haki, who is still here building temples to black lives, monuments to Mama Gwendolyn. My family is here. My father, six blocks from me in Albany Park, the mayor of the city's broke dreams. He holds them in his growing belly, his breaking heart, falling asleep in front of the television, chatting through the night in his taxi. The city with money calls an Uber. He drives new residents to wherever they wish to go. Thank God for the hustle, the hustler. My father, the kindest, most incompetent businessman here. He doesn't swindle or cheat. He is honest and fair. What a sucker the city makes of sweet men. Like me, I guess. I just want justice and someone to read poems to you, Chicago. My heart is all the people who make it, who are making it, barely in the 77 hoods. I hate the viaducts, the millionaires who urban plan them from the suburbs they resurrect downtown. Chicago, you have my heart, my whole history, my people you saved seeking refuge here, tucked in apartments in Ukrainian village in North Lawndale. You saved them from history while destroying others. My mother left, my brother moved, my friends gone, too much rent, debt. You killed some off. You are a ghost mound. I stalk still. Chicago, you have my heart, split in two, like the city and stories you tell. But I am one, not two. I am one. Second will not do. You can't continue to break us in two in remade, refurbished, renewed models for the few. Chicago has my heart, but my head, my hands, my body with the people who build, who have a limit and can break and tear it down and stop it from becoming what it's becoming. What is it becoming? Chicago has my heart, but the hearts of those who call this home, who root and champion the losers and villains who run this place, who put on for the pizza in Arctic weather. We will turn our backs on the very land we are locked in, turn our backs on the capital, wage slaves you've made us become. We will burn your memory in effigy and house dance in the afterglow. We rise, Chicago. This body politic will rise. Our fire will burn again.
Wow. That's great. Poet Kevin Koval in studio, A People's History of Chicago, his new collection. Kevin, I can't thank you enough for coming in, performing as well.
Pleasure,
thanks
man.
For
thank
being my
you.
Guest.
And I
tonight,
appreciate
man.
The conversation too, Justin. Thank you.